Very good to see you here this morning. Appreciate your presence. So a preacher friend of mine a few years ago was asking about a congregation in the state of Nevada. Great congregation. I had done a gospel meeting there at one point. Loved all the members, good elders, had nothing bad to say about it, but I did warn him he was going to be interviewing there, or at least talking to the elders about possibly moving there. I did say, you got to be careful in Nevada. You know, you're bringing your family into an environment where gambling is something that's so common, it's prevalent, it's everywhere. You get off your airplane at the airport and you're met by slot machines at McCarran International Airport. I mean, literally, slot machines right there outside the terminal. You go to the grocery store and there's slot machines in the front of the grocery store. It's just so prevalent and so apparent and so obvious. I said, if you're going to move to Nevada, just make sure you're aware of that as you go into it. Now, nobody ever gave me that warning when I was going to move to Phoenix 5 years ago. But it is interesting, in a state where you don't think of gambling as being such a common thing, in a city where technically within the city limits there's no gambling going on, that you see casinos all over the place. You see their signs, you see the names of them plastered everywhere, their advertisements, the names of arenas here in this city are named after casinos and gambling interests. Nobody ever gave me that warning when I was moving to Phoenix. So one of the things that I want to talk about today in this lesson is the idea of gambling. And what does the Bible have to say about it? If the Bible has anything to say about gambling specifically, or are there at least concepts that we can talk about that have to do with gambling that kind of give us some sense or some moral guidance when it comes to this? Throughout the year, I would like to talk about some issues of worldliness. I want to talk about some moral issues that face us, because as Alan pointed out a few weeks ago in a great lesson on the subject of worldliness, we are supposed to be different. And the way that we behave and the way that we talk, our recreational activities, our social activities, the things that we watch on TV, all of those things are supposed to be different enough that people of the world know we're not like them. Not in a judgmental manner, not in a sense that we're better than them or high and mighty, but that we've made choices, moral choices, ethical choices, choices in our behavior that reflect our connection and our devotion to God. And gambling is one of those things I want to talk about. Certainly, this isn't going to be something I talk about very frequently, and there's a lot of other things we'll talk about as far as worldliness goes, but I thought, well, this is a good place to start. Because like I said, you don't always think of gambling and Phoenix, Arizona as being that associated with each other. But when you move here, you do realize that it's present. It's present and it affects us. It affects people of the world, affects Christians. It affects our culture and our society and our community. So what is gambling? I'm sure you understand what gambling is, but if we could give kind of a technical definition to it, we might realize that it's not just casino gaming, it's not just online gaming. There's a lot of other things that we could consider gambling, at least in that technical sense, that we don't always think about. Gambling, first of all, is the deliberate hazarding of something of value. You typically do not gamble something that has no value. You're not gambling your old gym socks. You're not gambling that lawnmower in your garage that doesn't work anymore. You're gambling something that has value, and you've hazarded that thing. Profit is determined by an uncertain event. In gambling, there is no 100% certainty. In gambling, there are no guarantees, except perhaps the guarantee that in the end, the house ends up winning for the day. One can only profit at the loss of others who participate, without whose participation there could be no gamble. So gambling then requires other people to be involved, and the only way that you win something in a gamble is if somebody else has lost something, and that's an important thing that we'll talk about later on. And while there might be many forms of gambling, all of these essential elements appear in every kind of gamble. Casino gaming, slot machines, the state lottery, betting on sporting events, and even online gambling are all examples. But like I said, there are more subtle varieties of gambling that might also fit that definition. So what are the obvious issues associated with gambling then that the Christian should consider? The first is this. Over 80% of American adults gamble at least once a year. 2.5 million of them are compulsive or problem gamblers. And this was a statistic that I had to read it twice. I just couldn't even believe that this was the statistic. $500 billion a year are spent on wagers in America. $500 billion. And that's about twice as much as what people spend donating to charities every year. Think about that. In any gamble, what are your odds? I mean, 50-50? Really, 50-50? If you've got a 50-50 gamble, that's about as good as it's going to get for you. In most gambles, the odds are a lot less than that. 1 in 100? 1 in 1,000? 1 in a million? I mean, if you're playing the lottery, and every, you know, when you're turning left onto McDowell coming from the freeway, you've got that huge sign for the Powerball, right? And every week it gets bigger. It's 50 million, and then it's 100 million, and then sometimes it's 300 million, and sometimes it's even more than that. I mean, what are you a 1 in a million chance of winning that? Here's the thing about charity, though, that if you do your research and find a good charity to donate to, if you do your research and know where the money is going, if you're giving your money to another Christian who has a need, if you're giving your money to God so that the work of the church can get done, I'm not going to apply odds to that, because when it comes to charity, when you do things the right way when it comes to charity, when you do things the right way when it comes to benevolence, when you do things the right way when it comes to hospitality and caring for people who have a need, your money always helps. And your money is always effective. And you have a 100% chance of that money actually doing something useful for other people. You don't get those odds when it comes to gambling. And it's pretty sad when you live in a country when people spend $500 billion a year on gambling and they spend less than half of that on donating to charities. That, to me, is very sad. Gambling is also linked with other major issues such as depression, bankruptcy, crime in the surrounding community, and even child abuse. Now, I know that there are gambling interests and there are lobbyists who might quibble with some of these things, but the fact remains that even if gambling or casino gaming is not the cause of a lot of these things, there is a statistical link between them. So please understand, I'm not saying that the link is always causation. That just building a casino is not necessarily the thing that is making crime increase in a community, but there's a fact that there's a statistical link between those two things, that where one goes, other things tend to follow. Go to James chapter 3. Notice an interesting passage here in James chapter 3, and pick up in verse 13. I'm going to read the entire context here because I want to prove a point here, but there's one detail in particular I want to notice in just a moment. Who among you is wise and understanding? James chapter 3, verse 13. Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. People will know you by your behavior. Maybe this should be, Alan, if we're going to do anything else on worldliness, maybe this should be the key verse that we talk about in every single lesson, because people will know you by your behavior. They'll know the kind of wisdom that you have. They'll know your thoughts. They'll know who you are on the inside because of the good behavior that you show. And that, to me, has a lot to do with worldliness and how we act around other people. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition, there's the link there to the gambling. Selfish ambition, something that I want for me that doesn't help anybody else, that I want to win, I want to get rich quick, I want the big payday. Selfish ambition in your heart. Do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, and demonic. For where jealousy, and verse 16, here's the key I want to bring out. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every other evil thing. Look what James is saying there. So you have one sin, maybe two, jealousy and selfish ambition, categorized as one thing, I think is what James is saying. One thing there, one kind of category of sin, jealousy and selfish ambition. But where those things go, what tends to follow? He says, disorder and every other evil thing. When you start with selfishness, every other evil thing follows after it eventually. The thing about sin is, sin does not stay categorized. Sin does not stay in tidy little boxes. When you welcome one sin into your life, when you welcome one sin into a community, when you welcome one sin into a church family, it doesn't take long for other sins to creep in. Sin does not stay categorized in tidy little boxes for us. And also, gambling is still considered a vice. Now, I understand with 80% of American adults participating in gambling that you could say, numerically speaking, most people don't have a problem with gambling. And yet, I think kind of behind all of that, do people still have a problem with gambling? Even people who participate in it? Think about this. The very fact that we have age limits on things like the lottery, that you have to be 18 or 21 to do various things, that you have to be 18 or 21, depending on the jurisdiction or the state, to even walk into a casino, that you have to be of a certain age to even walk into a casino, means that even the people who are maintaining, building, even the people who are standing up for those casinos understand there's something wrong with having a 14-year-old kid wasting his lunch money at a slot machine. There's something disturbing about that. Even the people who are standing up for casinos and participating in gambling understand there's just something about it that we just don't want our kids doing. It's still considered a vice to a degree, so your ability to influence and impact other people can be affected by that. There's another story from the same congregation in Nevada, by the way. It's a story that I heard while I was preaching there one time. And a member of that congregation was talking to me about the casino gaming, the slot machines. Because I'm a curious person. You know how I am. When I go to a gospel meeting, I get to be there for a few days, make whatever mess I want, and then I can come home. So if I'm going to be in Nevada, I'm going to ask him about casino gaming. I'm going to ask him, how does it affect your lives? How does it affect your influence? Do people in the church work in the gaming industry? And somebody came up to me, a woman, and she said, this is the reason why I quit gambling altogether. I used to go through the grocery line, and I had my money. I paid in cash. I had my budget for that day, $100 or whatever it was for the week of groceries. I don't remember what number she said. And if I could, you know, bring enough coupons and find the deals, and if I could get in under my budget, then whatever was left over, I'd go straight to the slot machine, pass the register, because they have them right in the grocery stores there, and I would just gamble whatever was left over of my grocery budget. And I did that all the time, every week or however often it was, and I would use the same cashier, and we got to know each other. And there was one time that this lady mentioned to the cashier at the grocery store that she was a Christian or that she was going to go to church the next day. And the cashier said, "You're a Christian? Boy, I had no idea." And this woman realized that her behavior, even in something as small as gambling away her pocket change, her behavior was not lining up with what she claimed to be as a Christian. And from that day forward, she quit gambling altogether. And that story has always stuck with me. Now, here's a bigger concept, because somebody might say, well, where in the Bible, and by the way, always be wary of that. When people are trying to defend something and their first argument is, well, where in the Bible does it say? Be really wary of that, because if you have to have something specifically mentioned, something mentioned by name every time you want to quibble or argue or defend a behavior, you need to be really careful. Because the Bible also doesn't specifically mention pornography. And the Bible never mentions heroin. And the Bible never mentions organized crime. There's a lot of things in the Bible that didn't exist 2,000 years ago or 4,000 years ago that exist now that are simply, they're manifestations of the same sins. They're just packaged in a different form. What has been a sin 2,000 years ago is still a sin now, and you might put a different package on it. You might name it something else. You might conveniently repackage it as something else, but when you take the plastic wrap off of it, you realize at its core, it's the same thing that was mentioned 2,000 years ago as a sin. And I think gambling is one of those things. So even though I can't point to a Bible verse that says, "And thou shalt not gamble in thine casino establishments," there are some things in the Bible, some concepts that give us some positive teaching when it comes to how we handle money and the transfer of wealth between one person and another, or between one entity or institution and another. There's a transfer of property that God endorses. There are three means of transferring property in the Bible that God endorses. And if you're transferring property in any other way but this, God has not endorsed that transfer of wealth. The first is this, the principle of labor. Go to Ephesians 4, verse 28. And notice here in Ephesians 4:20, in a great context, by the way, a great passage on the new life that you're living in Christ as compared or contrasted to your old life in the world. In Ephesians 4:28, "Let him who steals steal no longer, but rather let him labor, performing with his own hands what is good, in order that he may have something to share with him who has need." We'll look at the second part of that in a minute here. But what I want to point out there is God endorses the idea of labor. That when you work, you ought to receive something in return. A paycheck, whatever it is, a wage. Maybe you're just getting paid in an apple pie and a dozen eggs for the day. But whatever it is, that when you work, it is okay for wealth to be transferred between people. It is the concept or the principle of labor. 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 12. "Now such persons we command and exhort in the Lord Jesus Christ to work in quiet fashion and to eat their own bread." So that's one concept there, is that if you've worked for something, then you have every right to receive a wage in return for that thing. But we can also transfer wealth because of the principle of exchange, where we might not have worked for something, but we come to an agreement that says, "Well, I have this kind of car, and I want to get it off my hands. And you have that kind of car, and I'd really like to get a bigger car or a smaller car or a pickup truck with a good bed. Why don't we swap cars then, this car for that car?" And that becomes a principle of exchange then, where we have come to an agreement where we agree to exchange one thing for another, one piece of wealth for another, one luxury item, one necessity, food for other food. We barter for something, and that is something that God also endorses in the Bible. Go to Matthew chapter 25. Notice here in Matthew chapter 25, verse 27. He says here to the unrighteous servant who wasted his money by burying it in the ground. This was his retort to that man. "You ought to have at least put my money in the bank, and on my arrival I would have received my money back with interest." So what he's saying there is, that man might not have worked for the money. That is the landowner, the master. He might not have worked for the money. He didn't do anything to earn that money. But there was a principle there that said, I can put my money somewhere where my money might work for me, where my money will get something back for me, simply because I have agreed to exchange it for something else. Anytime you leave money in the bank, what are you essentially saying to that bank? You're saying, here's my money. I give you permission to take that money and loan it out to other people. Loan it to businesses. Loan it to new homeowners. Loan it to people who want to buy a car. You can go and take that money, invest it in the stock market in some way. Here's my money. Take it, and you may invest it however you see fit and earn money back for me when it comes to the interest on that money. So that's the principle of exchange, one thing for another. And finally, the principle of love. Back in Ephesians 4:28, he says, get a job so that you can earn money and have something to share with those who have a need. Now, those who have a need, they didn't work for it. And they're not exchanging anything. When you look at somebody who has a need and you give them something to help with that need, you expect nothing in return. In fact, Jesus even pointed that out in one of his parables, where he says, when you hold a feast, when you're going to have a banquet, don't go invite all your friends who can pay you back. Go invite the people who can't pay you back, the poor and the destitute. Invite them to your banquet because you know that they do not have the means to give you anything in return. That is the concept of love. To give to others who have a need, expecting absolutely nothing in return. Now, if you can find any other way that God endorses in the Bible where wealth is transferred between one person and another, where God endorses it, then let me know, because I can't find it anywhere else. So in which of these three principles does gaming or gambling apply? Not only does gambling not fit any of these concepts, but gambling also seems to violate an overt concept in Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 2, which says, "Ill-gotten gains do not profit." And any gain that you make that does not fit these three principles is an ill-gotten gain. Maybe it's casino gaming or slot machines, or maybe it's just stealing from somebody, swindling somebody. We've been reading Matilda with the kids lately. Who's read that book, Matilda? Child's book. Really, Roald Dahl. Everything Roald Dahl writes, by the way. Kids love it because it's silly. Adults love it because of that really dark sense of humor that he has. But Matilda's father in that book is a used car salesman. And he gloats when he gets home from work. He gloats about all the junkers that he sold that day. "I bought that for only this much money and I sold it for twice that much." He fills the gearboxes up with oil and sawdust. Anybody familiar with what that does? When you've got a bad transmission and you're trying to sell a junker, you put a little sawdust in there with some oil and the thing runs perfectly fine for about 100 miles. The same thing happened in an episode of the Andy Griffith Show as well, if anybody remembers that one. But he makes all this money from flipping bad cars. A little paint here and there, a little sawdust in the gearbox, and he'll sell a junker for twice what it's worth. That's ill-gotten gains. And ill-gotten gains, according to the writer of Proverbs, ill-gotten gains do not profit. All right, well, somebody might say, what's the big deal with gambling? It's a risk, isn't it? I get that. It's a risk. It's a 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 1,000,000 chance, whatever the odds might be for that particular area of gaming that I'm involved in. But hey, listen. There are a lot of other risky things that we do in life, and you don't have a problem with them. I've never heard you preach a sermon on the stock market. I've never heard you preach a sermon on the dangers of farming. And yeah, farming is very risky. Farming is a very risky business to get involved in. Opening up a restaurant is a really risky business as well. A lot of people open up restaurants, and it doesn't end up working out. There's a place just near our house. It seems like it's a revolving door of owners. You know, it was a pancake place for a while, or it was a Santa Fe style food for a while, right? Santa Fe style food, and then they closed that, and then it was something else for a while, and now it's an eggs and pancakes place, and I think that's doing pretty well because you can't go wrong with pancakes, really, unless you make them bad. But, you know, have you ever noticed that, though? Like, there's certain locations where it's like a revolving door of different kinds of restaurants. Because it's a risky business. So somebody might make the argument of, what's your big deal with gambling when there's a lot of other things that we do in life that are risky? They're very risky, but you've never preached a sermon on those things. Well, here's a couple of answers then, a couple of things I think about. First of all, when it comes to opening up a new restaurant or investing in the stock market or becoming a farmer, these things might be risky, but they are legitimate forms of business. They're legitimate forms of business that don't stand to gain at another person's loss. And that's an important thing to think about. Remember, one aspect of gambling that we pointed out on the very first slide, one part of the definition is you only win when somebody else loses. Your winnings represent everybody else's losses. And that is not true of legitimate forms of business. In fact, you could make the argument that when it comes to the stock market, that the stock market as a business model depends on other people winning along with you. I mean, the very idea of the stock market is we all want to win together. We all want the stock market to rise up because as the water level rises, it brings everything else with it floating up. So the whole concept of that is, I think, very different than the idea of gambling. Second, they're not wagers that are based on chance, but they're investments based on calculation. That's a really important thing to think about. And maybe here's a distinction that we can make. On the very first slide with the definition of gambling, I said there might be more subtle forms of gambling that don't fit the traditional definition of casinos, online gaming, sports betting, that sort of thing. Maybe, Maybe the stock market is a gamble, if you've treated it like a gamble. Maybe for you, if you've treated the stock market like a gamble, maybe for you it is gambling, and then it becomes a sinful thing. If you're playing fast and loose, especially with other people's money, if you're playing fast and loose with money, if you're not making the calculations, if you are not taking everything into account, if you're throwing your money into really, really risky things that can either boom or bust, like that, wasn't a very good snap, by the way. There you go. Then maybe for you the stock market is a gamble, and you've got to avoid it. But I think for the most part, when you look at the stock market or opening a new business or farming, those aren't just wagers based on a 1 in 1,000 chance. Those things are investments that are based on calculation and forethought. They also don't lead to something for nothing. If you're going to make money in the stock market, it's because you put your effort in, you've done your research. If you're going to make money owning a restaurant, it's because you have put a lot of work into running a restaurant. If you're going to make money as a farmer, you're going to make money because of the sweat from your brow. And they're also inherently designed to facilitate success with proper effort. Gambling is designed to take, regardless of skill, effort, or planning. But all these other things require skill, effort, and planning. So I just don't think the risk argument holds a lot of water if you're going to try and justify gambling with that. The last point that we'll make is this. What's your motive? Because really when it boils down to it, we go back to James chapter 3, and where selfish ambition and jealousy exist, every other evil thing comes with it. And if your desire is the get rich quick, I want something for nothing, I want the quick, easy answer for everything in life, then really your motive ends up just being greed. Plain and simple, it's greed. Beware of covetousness. Covetousness is mentioned in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 as a sin that will keep you out of the kingdom of heaven. Romans 13 verse 9 as well. Go to Colossians 3 verse 5. Notice what the writer says here in Colossians 3 and verse 5. Consider, he says, the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. Greed, which amounts to idolatry. And we've got to be real careful also. It can be very slippery. When you do turn left onto McDowell, coming to the church building, and you see that Powerball sign. I mean, it's just huge, huge numbers that just grow bigger and bigger every week. I would say, just guessing, every single one of us in this room has at some point daydreamed about what you'd do with that $300 million. Now, I'm not saying that's a sin, okay? I'm not saying it's a sin for just that little moment to say, boy, you know, $300 million, well, you could buy a lot of neckties for $300 million. I'm not saying that's necessarily a sinful thing. But where does that little daydream take you? Where does that little thought take you? That conversation that you have with your spouse where, what would we do? Sweetie, what would we do with that money if we were to win the lottery? What would we do? Where does that little conversation take you? It takes a lot of people to a really dark place. It takes a lot of people down the path of greed, self-destruction, and as Colossians 3:5 puts it, idolatry. Gambling is addictive. And only the naive, and as rude as it is to say that maybe, but you're naive. Only naive people claim that gambling is just a hobby, or that it's some recreational activity, or that it's just a diversion that's not even as bad as television. 1 Corinthians 6:12 says that we're supposed to be enslaved to nothing, even things that might technically be considered lawful. Enslaved to nothing. And gambling is an insult to the sentiment of 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 24. This will be our last point, my friends. Notice what it says here. Let no one seek his own good, but that of his neighbor. And the entire concept of gambling is whether you're around a green felt table and everybody else has to lose in order for you to gain. Or you're scratching off that lottery ticket, or you're checking the numbers on the Powerball night, and your winnings come as a result of a gambling addict's losses. that somebody else filed for bankruptcy and you're gaining because of that. That somebody else's marriage is being ruined because of their addiction and you get to take home a giant paycheck because they threw that into a pot. The very concept that you take money that you've earned from your job that should be going to God, to your family, to charity, that could be used to take your family on a vacation sometime and spend some time with your kids, and that money is getting washed down the toilet. The very fact that gambling does that to people and leads people to that end, let no one seek his own good but that of his neighbor. Your spouse is your neighbor. Your kids are your neighbor. The gambling addict who is struggling, that's your neighbor. The person sitting next to you at the poker table is your neighbor. Let no one seek his own good but that of his neighbor. That's a pretty powerful concept. Now, I really appreciate your attention this morning. This could be a really difficult topic sometimes. Sometimes as a preacher, you kind of wonder, like, am I going to step on someone's toes this morning? If you've become defensive in some way because of this lesson, maybe you've seen gambling as a harmless, innocent pastime for you, I just encourage you to reconsider the topic. Look at the scriptures that we've talked about today. Come talk to me in person, in private, if you'd like to talk about this a little bit more. And maybe if you are a problem gambler, this is something you've been hiding for a long time, maybe even your spouse doesn't know, come talk to me in private. Things will be kept in confidence and we can talk about this issue together. I can lead you to a source, a phone number, a website. I can lead you to a place that can maybe help you with this addiction. I would love to help you in any way that I can and lead you to the answers to these problems. Now, if you're not a Christian, you really ought to be, and I hope that anything we've said today might spur you on to reconsider the gospel, which in short says, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved, Mark 16, verse 16. So if you have any spiritual need at all, please let it be known right now as we stand and sing together.